218-4523. We have lots of, we and many others throughout the country have lots of activities. For example, we're rallying tomorrow at the Malaysian consulate as John Kerry travels to Malaysia to express outrage that in a cynical move, the State Department just upgraded Malaysia from the Tier 3 worst of the worst human trafficking list to the Tier 2 watch list to circumvent a fast-track rule that says that we will not, U.S., fast-track trade agreements with worst of the worst human traffickers like Malaysia, which is a TPP member nation. This happening just 2 months after Malaysia was exposed as having human trafficking camps and mass graves, 135 mass graves. And just in the last few days, more and more news reports, one in the New York Times today about sex trafficking in Malaysia, one on the 26th about forced labor in the palm oil industry, a recent New York Times article about forced labor in the commercial fishing industry coming out of Malaysia. So the State Department betrayed human rights and its own credibility in order to upgrade Malaysia for this report so that TPP could be fast-tracked. So we are expressing our disgust to Secretary Kerry and his betrayal of human rights, and by extension, the Obama administration's betrayal of human rights. Again, if people want to find out more about us, we're at tradejustice.net, and we urge everyone to contact their elected officials and let them know that human rights and our environmental rules and our consumer rights should not be compromised in the name of corporate profits through rotten trade deals like the TPP.
We've been talking with Adam Weissman. He's an organizer with Global Justice for Animals and the Environment and also with Trade Justice New York Metro. This is Ken Jones with KBOO News.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present The Yes Men Are Revolting as part of the KBOO at the Clinton monthly film series. The Yes Men Are Revolting is a documentary directed by Andy Bickelbaum and Mike Bonanno, which follows the comedy troupe The Yes Men as they stage phony press releases and events to bring attention to environmental dangers and corporate greed. Again, that's The Yes Men Are Revolting, Thursday, August 13th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
The time is 6:01, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Coming up next is Labor Radio at 6, and at 6:30 is Prison Pipeline, followed by the River Signal at 7. So please stay tuned. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting an evening with Leon Russell, Tuesday, August 11th. Tickets and information for Leon Russell are available at aladdin-theater.com.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Holla. Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, for the working class, here on KBOO 97 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am a member of the American Federation of State and County Municipal Employees and the current president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Tonight, I'm joined once again by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Dr. Audrey Terrell. I'm retired staff from the United Auto Workers and also the vice president of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists.
Tonight, our segment will highlight the elements of the Fair Shot campaign and the impact on the 2015 legislature. Our guest tonight, we have two, is Andrea Paluso, She is the co-founder and executive director of Family Forward Oregon, and Casey Jama, who works with the Center for Intercultural Organizing. Welcome. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I mentioned that you were involved in the Fair Shot campaign. Can you give us an idea of exactly what the Fair Shot campaign is?
Sure. So the Fair Shot Coalition is a group of labor and community organizations that came together just about a year ago and decided that we wanted to work together in a different way, that we wanted to really lift up some of the work that was happening in communities and really prioritize advancing on some issues that we think have a disproportionate impact on women and on people of color. And so the group of us came together and established some shared values and some kind of guiding principles, and then out of that grew a legislative agenda for the 2015 legislative session. So the groups, you know, each of the groups was sort of working on a lot of different issues individually or together in different ways. But we decided that the group together should really adopt this agenda that included five different issues. One was passing a statewide law, making sure everyone could earn paid sick time. Another was to end police profiling practices. Another was to ban the box or remove questions about criminal history from job applications. And another was to create a safe way for more people to save for retirement. And then the last issue was to increase the minimum wage.
So before we get into those new laws. Can you give us some idea of what your organization is about?
Sure. Yeah, I'll talk about Family Forward Oregon and turn it to Casey. So we're an organization that was started by Oregon moms about 7 years ago, and really looking at a couple of things. One is that motherhood is a leading predictor of poverty and old age in the United States. Single motherhood is a leading predictor of poverty really at any age. And, you know, we have some ideas about why that's true. The fact that we still as a country don't have even basic laws in place that ensure people access to time off, access to a living wage, access to a schedule that they can control and set or have some say in, access to affordable child care, set of issues that, you know, many other countries are really much further along in establishing than we are. And we see the economic impact of that on women broadly. Women of color are even more disproportionately impacted by earning lower wages. You know, so equal pay is a thing that we talk about even for the same work. They're earning lower wages and seeing increased costs due to family caregiving demands. So those are the things that we generally think about as an organization.
Okay. And thank you, Tina. And at Center for Intercultural Organizing, we're a multiracial immigrant refugee rights organization. And I think, you know, everyone understands, I think, less of us, the challenges that immigrant refugee population face when they come to a new country. So our organization was established in order to address some of those challenges, whether, you know, integration and helping them to integrate to their new community, but also just a lot of times also addressing the issues that they face as, you know, including profiling, as mm-hmm. well as, you know, economic opportunities, participating in civic life in our cities and our state. So we're really a multifaceted organization, but also mainly a lot of our immigrant refugee folks that we work with are also come from mainly a lot of the community of color. The community can define themselves as they are here now as a community of color, uh-huh. community members newly added. So they a lot of times face this, you know, some extent, some similarities of the challenges that the long-term community of color community members face here. So our goal is really building bridges in the community and figure out ways those communities work together to achieve social justice in our state. And for us, at Fair Shots, it's what brought us to the table has been, we want to make sure that, you know, I think our labor union brothers and sisters have done, you know, a lot of work and in terms of just advancing issues that they care about. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times also immigrant refugees, people of color in this state, a lot of times our experience at least has been, we always call only at the table when the decision has already been made.
I see.
So this time we really, as Andrea was saying, that we decided to change. And instead of talking about, you know, middle class, we want to talk about working class. We want to talk about a poor community. We want to talk about immigrant refugees community. We want to talk about people who are unemployed. We want to talk about women. We want to talk about LGBTQ community members. So we really want to define who are we focusing and expanding, making sure that the, all communities are benefiting our economic prosperity.
So it sounds like the issues that you two worked on at the legislature are issues that affect the common person who doesn't necessarily have a voice. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's a fair assessment, but again, you know, I think the emphasis is that, you know, doing a new way of business in Oregon. And I think one of the things that I really excited about this table for me was that when we came together and we talked about how do we change the narrative of Oregon. And that narrative, that means we have to really focus people who are on the on the bottom of the barrel, if you can say. We decided to focus on racial justice lens and use racial justice as a way of advancing our issues. We talked about using as a value as addressing gender justice lens and using, you know, addressing as a key ways that those two issues that we can address and some of the challenges we are facing. And that's some of the success that we have seen contributed because of that. And I think that's what really excited me, at least as a member.
So, Andrea, when I talked to you a little earlier before the show, we talked a little bit about how you have a concern and how you move that concern through the legislative process. Can you give our listeners some idea of how long it took, what the process you went through in order to bring these things into the light of day?
Yeah, I mean, our organization was the lead, one of the lead organizations on the Paid Sick Days campaign. And I can say that we've been talking about paid sick days in various forms with folks in the legislature for 4 years or more. We started talking with folks in the legislature, our elected officials, about it a number of years ago. It became clear at the time that we didn't have the support that was going to be needed to pass a statewide policy. So we moved into looking at the issue on the local level and passed ordinances in Portland and in Eugene first in 2013 and 2014, leading into the legislative session this year in 2015. And we're successful at that point in establishing a statewide law, but it did take years and a lot of advocacy and a lot of partnership with really, you know, great organizations all over the state and a lot of workers from all parts of the state speaking up and sharing sometimes hard stories about their experiences not having access to paid sick time. And you know, all of that adds up over time to, you know, become something that's inevitable and something that needs to pass and that will pass, but it is a lengthy process.
As I listen to you, Andrea, I'm retired from the staff of the International United Auto Workers, and what you're doing is precisely what we were trying to do. So I see and I commend you on your efforts, mm-hmm. because even though we were concerned about worker rights, it's about people rights.
That's right.
You know, and whether you're organized or unorganized, with a job or without a job, your voice for people. So I commend you, both of you, on your efforts. And as I was reading through some of the things that you've done with the Oregon Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, I was just so impressed how, and I've sat on negotiating tables with General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler, so harassment, sexual harassment, and paid time off and overtime pay, that's just what the unions do.
Right.
You know, so coalescing with you, even having you here to show how we all are coming together, fighting the same fight, as Brother Casey was saying, racial profiling, social justice, is just a whole gamut. And it's so good that we're coming together. So I'm just excited to have you here, not only to hear about the things you've been doing, that you are doing to make a difference in the community.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think that as to Casey's point earlier, you know, one of the things that we discussed when we were coming together was really that we're seeing increasingly more people who are struggling to get by. And you know, really not feeling like maybe they're doing as well as their parents did, and they're falling behind, and they're not able to make ends meet, and they can't keep up with costs, and that's true. And at the same time, there are all kinds of folks, and particularly among communities of color, who've really never had the same chance to get ahead and to feel like they can, you know, get by and have a job that helps make ends meet and live in a community that is supported. And so one of the things that we really wanted to talk about was, it's not enough for us as a community to just talk about, and for us to let sort of our electeds talk about rebuilding the middle class and what that means, when there were so many women and so many people of color who were excluded from even participating in the middle class throughout the history of this country, really. And that we have an opportunity after a big recession to do it differently, to recover the economy in a way that actually lifts everybody. And that's a choice. We can choose to do that, or we can choose not to do that, but that is a choice. And, you know, our hope, and I think our pressing kind of concern, is that we do this in a way where everybody can experience economic recovery and prosperity, and we're not leaving some folks behind.
So Casey, you had indicated earlier, one of the things you were concerned about was profiling. Now, it's my understanding that there was a profiling bill that did pass. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. It did pass, and it really, struck me. It passed with a majority support for both House and Senate. But I think also we have to track back and see how that happened and why that happened. And because I think, my organization has been working on this issue more than a decade, and I think there's other organizations and other community members who have been also fighting these same issues in multiple fronts for many, many years. So the issue, we know that it's not an easy issue to tackle with. I think what this time was different is that, number one, of course, we all know what's happening nationally. We know the cases, the Ferguson and New York, and just recently, as you know, cases of Texas, the young woman who's been, according to them, killed herself. But we know that there's more into the history than that. Mm-hmm. So as this issue became forefront of the discussion, really helped to elevate the issue into the more. So that's one of the, I think, also the decades work that led to that, but also just the opportunity of that, now the highlights of what's happening nationally and the attention that the issue is getting, but also the support that we're getting from our Fair Shots table, that really also helped us to elevate this issue in a level that I have never seen before. So it's been really good partnership and collaboration for many, many organizations. I think we had built around 65 organizations who are endorsed or participated the campaign one way or another and contributed through the statewide. So this has been a movement, and this has been a statewide movement for many years. But having said that, the bill is passed, and I think, does this bill really solve profiling? I don't think so. Does that help to address some of the challenges that the community, and gives ways to folks to address profiling? Absolutely. So what really this bill does is very much is three things. One, it defines profiling, and profiling, state of Oregon, surprisingly, is one of these few states that don't have a definition of profiling. So it defines and creates, profiling through lens of, race, gender, sexual orientation, religious affiliation, housing status, and so forth and so on. So it really creates the definition of profiling. Mm-hmm. It also authorizes the law enforcement contacts policy and data preview committee to receive complaints and analyze complaints. And then the last piece, what the bill does is creating a working group, which the working group is a task force that look into the establishing process of identifying patterns and practices of profiling, and then reporting back to the legislature how to address some of those patterns that recommendations of how to solve those issues. So those are the three things the bill does, and I think it's a good step forward, but I don't think so it is the end of this issue.
Okay, so you proceed, this will come up at the 2016 legislature.
We're hoping that once the working group finishes their work and recommend it to ways of addressing some of those pattern or issues that come emerge, I think hopefully there will be a bill that will address those, yes.
Okay. Well, for our listeners who just tuned in, This is the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. We highlight the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. And so today we have two guests, and we have Andrea Peluso and Casey Jama. They were involved in the Fair Shot Coalition, mm-hmm. that was very successful at the Oregon State Legislature. Once again, welcome. And you indicated earlier, Andrea, that there were five mm-hmm. issues that were brought forward through the Fair Shot. Can you give our listeners a little more input on the other three that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, so Casey just gave a great summary of the profiling bill and legislation that was passed. We also passed a law that allows for all workers in the state of Oregon to accrue sick time. So that law basically says that if you work for an employer with 10 or more employees, that you should accrue an hour of sick time for every 30 hours that you work, up to, the employer can allow you to accrue more if they want to, but they're required to allow you to accrue up to 40 hours of sick time, paid sick time per year, that you can use for your illness, your child's illness, you know, a family member's illness, to help take care of them or to take care of yourself when you're sick, or to use to go to the doctor or go to the dentist or get preventive care, or take your kids to the dentist, any of those kind of things. It also has a safe time component that allows for the same use of that time for issues related to domestic violence or sexual assault or any of those kinds of sort of violent experiences. So filing a protective order and things like that are things you could use your sick time for. For those who work for smaller employers who have fewer than 10 employees, the employer can choose whether that time is paid or unpaid. You still accrue an hour for every 10 hours you work. You can still use it for all the same purposes, but the employer gets to choose about the pay part. And we're seeing, you know, a growing national movement around that, you know, headed toward hopefully a national law that requires paid sick time for everyone. Another issue that was passed this session is a retirement security issue that sets up basically a state retirement savings program that folks would be offered through their, actually would be required to be offered through their employer, and they can do a payroll deduction to invest in a retirement savings program. And that work will start on kind of establishing what that, the board for that will oversee it and establishing the program itself. So it's something that, you know, in the next couple of years, people will be able to start using as a retirement savings vehicle. And then the last one that passed this session was a ban the box law that's says that, you know, all employers have to remove questions asking about whether or not you have a arrest or conviction history from a job application. So one of the things, obviously, that we've seen over the long term is that, you know, while employment rates, you know, in some communities are going down, in Black communities, unemployment rates have been double the rate of the unemployment rate for the rest of the state for as long as we've been tracking that information. You're about to have a prison pipeline show. You know, there is a profiling experience that folks have. They're sure. More criminalized in Black communities. They're more represented in prison populations in Oregon, even though the population of African Americans in the state is much lower than the percentage of folks represented in our prison system. There is a racial justice component to the way that we criminalize people of color in Oregon and across the country. And that leads to not being able to find a job in the long term, not being able to access housing mm-hmm. in the long term, because these boxes that ask questions about your criminal history or arrest history. And so the state law is a first step that says we're going to remove that question from a job application. The city of Portland is considering taking it further to say, you know, really what needs to happen is we need to help people get as far into the employment application process as is possible mm-hmm. Before you're required to disclose information about your criminal history. And mm-hmm. the idea is that, you know, for lots of employers, and we've talked to lots of employers about this, your criminal history or an arrest history isn't actually relevant to the job that you're applying for in most cases. You know, if it's a violent crime, yes, the employer needs to have access to that information earlier. But for other things, it's probably not relevant to whether or not you'll be good at that job. And what you need is the foot in. And if there's a box mm-hmm. on an application, an employer is going to toss that application before they even talk right. to the person. Right. And if they get an application and they review it, and then you get to an interview and you get to meet this person and talk and understand who they are as a person, you're more likely to consider them for the job, whether or not they have a criminal history. And so how do we get people as far far through the process as possible before they're required to disclose information about something that might be an unrelated sort of experience to the job they're applying for.
Just to add to that, when we were up in Salem, when that was passed, you were there. Yeah. There was just a band of groups that it was just so powerful. And I can see from both of you talking how when we get together, you know, together we stand, but divided we fall. But on that day, when we looked around, we were all fighting for the same thing. It couldn't help but pass. Yeah. So it seems to me, as your groups, you're lobbyists. You know, I have a lot of friends that are lobbyists, yeah. But to see groups that are lobbying for these issues and then see the aftermath of these passing. So, I mean, I'm very much impressed with that. I was so excited that it was passed, mm-hmm. and the process of it all, mm-hmm. and how we, the different organizations got together, and then at the same time came together as one to get all this done. So I certainly commend you on all the work that both of you do.
Thank you. And, you know, it wasn't easy. We had to fight every step of the way. Yes. And each one of these things has sort of a different set of people who don't like it and who oppose it. And it really, for us to create the kind of change that we know is necessary to really lift folks up, requires us all coming together. It requires us outnumbering our opponents by magnitudes of, mm-hmm. like orders of magnitude. We have to be there in mass. We have to do twice as good a job. We have to have 10 times more people. We have to maintain pressure. We have to, you know, help folks do the thing that they want to do sometimes and hold them accountable when they don't do it. It requires that for almost any one of these things, mm-hmm. to happen.
So, Andrew, I want to give both you and Casey an opportunity to let our listeners know how they can find out more about your organizations.
Yeah, I think I just before I do that, I do want to just a little bit respond to the question earlier. I think in many ways, I think, you know, Salem was just a small part of the effort that took place, what happened in Salem. I think really the real job was done by the community groups who have been working hard to ensure the community members understand what's happening, understand to get involved, the labor organizations who are organizing around the clock and making sure their members are coming to the table and understanding the nuance of these policies and challenge. So for us, it's always about movement building. And I think for us, for example, in the profiling bill, I think for us making this to make statewide policy, because I think what easily in the past been dismissed as just, you know, Northeast Portland issue.
Right.
And we really was first time we were able to make this a statewide. People came from all the way to Medford, Oregon to testify and to support
and
Eugene, Oregon, across the state. So that's really one thing. In terms of how people can get involved, I think, you know, Center for Intercultural Organizing, we are very much led and supported by our members. So I think the first step is for some folks who listeners tonight hearing us first time is to go ahead and become a member. And the way you can become a member is to go to our website, www.interculturalorganizing.org, or call us, our main number at 503-287-4117. Again, 503-287-4117.
Yeah, and I want to reiterate what Casey said and say, you know, along with sort of the profiling law that he talked about and any of the other laws that pass this session, they're actually only going to be as good as people knowing that they have new rights. So I think the thing that I'd really love for the listeners to do is really start conversations in your homes, in your workplaces, with your friends, with your colleagues about the fact that these laws passed, that people have access to sick time, that there are mechanisms to file a complaint if you feel like you've experienced police profiling. There are, you know, you don't have to disclose criminal history soon. I mean, these laws won't, you know, be official until, you know, out there until next year, but about your criminal history in an employment application, you have a right to save for retirement through your workplace. If you don't know that you have these rights, then we can put as many laws on the books as we want to, but, you know, they won't change people's lives until they know that they can file a complaint and are empowered to do that. So I would encourage folks to have those conversations, make sure people know what their rights are. As far as Family Forward, you can find us at familyforward.org. You can also become a member. You can you get involved as a volunteer. There are lots of different things to do. And then we should also mention that the Fairshot site, which is fairshotoregon.org, and there's a way to sign up and sign a petition and get involved in future work. The issue that didn't pass this session, unfortunately, was increasing our minimum wage. That's a campaign that continues. So if folks are wanting to engage around actions to make sure that we see an increase to the minimum wage in 2016, that connect with us through fairshotoregon.org.
And you can find us also on Facebook.
That's great.
Wonderful. Dr. Terrell, you have any final words?
No, I'm just, oh my God, to hear what we've been fighting for 40 years, union rights, people rights, that there are others that have joined the effort. Mm-hmm. So it's wonderful to have you here, and I want to know more about you and how I can participate, because that's the heart of, yeah, as a union activist and community activist, there's not much difference.
That's right.
So we support you, and we're certainly glad to have you and to find out more that what you've done. And that, in fact, that's where we met, I believe. It was up in Salem. So the fight continues. Mm-hmm. And certainly we have you have our support. And Tina will tell you more about when we're going to meet. And certainly we want to be involved in keeping abreast of some of the activities that you're doing.
Thank you.
So I'd like to thank our listeners, and I'd also like to thank our guests today from Family Forward and from the Center for Intercultural Organizing. you are indeed doing yeoman's work out there. Thank you very much for being such wonderful advocates for the general public out there, because if it weren't for you, then some of these things wouldn't have passed. The everyday worker feels as though they're not being represented out there. And so, again, thank you very much. Again, the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, we meet the second Tuesday of every month at the Orion AFSCME Bill Lucy Building. Our meeting is at 6 o'clock, and it is open to all comers. So thank you very much, and have a great day, and holla.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor, along with North Portland Community Building Group, Proper, of the We Can Do It Together community concert. Local politicians, community activists, faith groups, and artists will join in a day of unity, song, and prayer in Kenton Park on Saturday, August 8th, from 4 p.m. to